RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And away we go for this Thursday, June 21st edition of the Landry Football Podcast. Got a few things to get to you today. We're going to continue our series of breaking down position units in college football. We're going to talk a little bit about linebacker units, some of the top linebackers in college football. We're going to explain cover three today. We've gone through some cover one, cover two. We'll get to cover three concepts and explain that to you. We've got some guys we want to talk to you a little bit about. We'd like to take a little different element, you know, maybe some breakout players and guys coming back from injuries in college football. We're going to get to that. We're going to look at some of the new NFL head coaches and how things might fit for them as the mini camps, OTAs have broken up. And the next step for these teams is the start of training camp, which will be but merely a month away before that takes place. Next week, we're going to get into some of the coordinator changes and their impact in college football. And we'll take a look at a focus on a team, a college team and an NFL team, each day from here on out. So we'll talk a little bit about the Eagles and Alabama, both champions from last year. Most people work their way up. We'll sit there and we'll kind of tell you a little bit about them, what we see going into the season. And then obviously we'll pick a different team every day. We've got, I think, just one or two questions today. Remind you that if you want something addressed here on the Landry Football Podcast, send it in to us. Go to LandryFootball.com, send us a question, hit contact Chris, and we'll address it right here on the podcast for you. Anything to do with football, we'll be glad to, or, you know, anything, you know, related to the game, on or off the field, we'd love to help you out here. So that's what we'd like you to do, send us the information. They also want to ask for your help on something. I'm going to try something different for those of you that are members of LandryFootball.com. And let me say that if you're not yet a member of LandryFootball.com, what a great opportunity to get involved right now during the summer. We've got our summer savings special. You get all these summer roster analysis and team previews and daily notebooks from the college and NFL scene. You get that by joining now. You get 50% off any subscription package. All you got to do is use the coupon code SUMMER, S-U-M-M-E-R. Do it today. You get the football season locked up at the lowest rate ever, which simply means if you get a year's membership right now, you get the football season for free. So check it out now. You get all the information leading up to the season that'll get you better prepared for the season than ever before. College and the NFL. We've right now down to the last five or six major college programs to preview. Up on the website, a lot of group of five teams as well. And we're starting our series, already started our series on NFL depth chart breakdowns, grading every player on every team as we do and explain what those grades means. You can really see, look at the quality of the rosters in the league. So we've got that for you, as well as a special series that we're running on the top players in the NFL, scouting reports on them. So it's a great opportunity, but I wanted to ask your help on this. In our daily notebooks, we want to try to do something that's going to be a better fit for you. We don't know what it is, so this is why we're trying to, again, serve you. We do a daily notebook segment, college football notebook and NFL notebook, that we provide information that's going, what's going on around the game. People I talk to around the college game, around the NFL, film grade nuggets from looking at, you know, this time of year, it's maybe some OTA tape. Still looking at spring practice tape. Obviously, as you get towards the season, there's more tape as the season is started. We get you a lot of that information. So all the news and nuggets involves coaching issues, involving coaching search issues, involves player issues, team issues, everything. How would you like that delivered to you? We've been doing it in a written form for some time. Do you like it that way? Would you like it done orally? Would you like me to provide that information in kind of a similar way that I do now. It's something that I'd like to get some feedback on. We may try to do a few oral presentations and let you see how you like it and see where that takes us. So check us out. Send us some information. Send us a line at contact Chris at LandryFootball.com. Go to LandryFootball.com and hit contact Chris and let us know. Okay, before we get to cover three, I want to get to some of the top linebacker units and linebackers in college football this year. And as I've done this now for the past several podcasts, breaking down each team, it's based on film grade notes from last year as well as film grade notes from this spring. It is not necessarily a projection of who's going to have the better year. It's who has to this point played to the level that warrants putting them in this situation, and we'll see how it plays out during the year. Got to be healthy. You got to play well together. A lot of things, as we know, factor into unit success, a team success. So we'll see how it goes. But when I look at the linebackers, and there's been a theme here, and you hear this school mentioned most often, Alabama linebackers probably, to me, come out looking the best of the bunch. And the injuries took a toll on them last year, but they've just got a load of top young players. This should be the best, when healthy, the best-looking linebacking core in the country. Dylan Moses, Mac Wilson will replace Sean Dion Hamilton and Rashawn Evans on the inside of the 3-4. They just churn out linebackers. They groom them. They recruit them. They develop them. They teach them. Great job. Both were breakout candidates last year. Terrell Lewis, Anthony Jennings, Christian Miller, battered injuries. But if healthy, they've got a dynamic athletic trio of pass rushers. Great-looking group. Michigan's group is really good. Khalik Hudson, Devin Bush, really good seasons. Hudson is a converted safety, athletic guy. Bush, really the prototypical physical flathead linebacker. In his first full year as a starter, he really did a great job. He was a tackling machine, really good getting pressure and finishing on his sacks. One interception. John Ross is going to replace Mike McCrary as the third starter. It's a really, really good group. Miami is starting to get back to where their linebackers look really good. Shaquille Quarterman, Michael Pinckney, Zach McLeod, been really impressive. This was one of the great units last year. Quarterman's the best of the group. He's an All-American type player. I worry a little bit about their depth, but the starting unit is right there with the top. Wisconsin, a really good unit. They've just got three returning starters. They have some needs to address to keep their defense at the same level it was last year. But, you know, if you look at the group, they lose Garrett Dooley, Leon Jacobs, but Jim Leonard's got some really good players. TJ Edwards, Ryan Connolly, Chris Orr, really good run-defending linebackers. And on the edge, Andrew Van Ginkle, Zach Bond, are really good players as well. Like this unit a lot. USC, this is where their strength is of their defense. Cameron Smith is an elite player. John Houston, John Smith is a starter inside in their 3-4 look. Houston, big-time tackler, big-time range. Porter Gustin played in only 4 games due to injury last year, but this guy is really a good pass rusher. So look out for him. Jordan Osefa starts opposite Gustin on the outside. Really good unit. Some other units to look out for. Clemson, Michigan State, Auburn, Notre Dame. Texas A&M's pretty good. Texas has got a pretty good unit. Oregon, Washington. A couple of schools that may be a little bit off the radar. Duke and Northwestern have good linebacking corps. Stanford's good. Iowa State's a program that's got some good linebackers. LSU's good. Oklahoma, Texas Tech. Kentucky's got some good linebackers. Arizona's pretty good. Arkansas's got a couple of good linebackers. So, individually, inside, best looking inside backer on tape going into this season is Cameron Smith, the aforementioned inside backer out of USC. TJ Edwards out of Wisconsin. Devin Bush out of Michigan. Shaquille Quarterman out of Miami, who I mentioned. Tavon Coney from Notre Dame. Deshaun Davis out of Auburn. Troy Dye out of Oregon. Khalil Hodge out of Buffalo. Jordan Jones out of Kentucky. Ben Burkervin out of Washington. Marcus Bailey, another Purdue linebacker that's really good. Bobby Okereke out of Stanford, really good inside backers. Now, outside backers love Devin White. He is the most athletic of the rangy athletic linebackers that LSU's had. He's the better of all of them, more athletic. Josh Allen of Kentucky. Joe Giles Harris makes Duke linebacking core pretty, pretty good. Khalid Hudson of Michigan. Joe Dineen out of Kansas is a really good player. Dakota Allen out of Texas Tech. Porter Gustin out of USC that I mentioned. Drew Tranquil out of Notre Dame. Dre Greenlaw out of Arkansas. Kendall Joseph out of Clemson. Anthony Jennings, who I mentioned, out of Bama. Tyree Dotson out of A&M. All good outside backers. We'll get to the secondary on Tuesday's edition of the Landry Football Podcast. As we kind of look towards, again, going through the film grade notes and looking at players, you tend to want to make note of certain players and things that you tend to forget guys when they're gone and they're injured and what have you. And maybe some guys that just flashed a little bit, but they weren't quite what maybe you thought they could be. But I think maybe have a chance to be breakout players this year. And so I thought I'd kind of go over some of those and also look at some guys that are coming off of an injury. We've talked about transfers, guys like that. So we'll get into right now some breakout players. Cam Akers of Florida State comes to mind first. Talented guy. A lot was expected of him last year. I think this is one player that's going to fit the new scheme, offensive scheme at Florida State better than the old scheme. He's a space player, really talented. Five-star guy. He shared carries with Jax Patrick last fall. Played well. Spread system, getting in space, tempo. I think it's going to fit him very, very well. Trajan Bandy, the corner from Miami. I think it's one of the better secondaries, and we'll get into that Tuesday. One of the better secondaries in the country, thanks in large part to the return of Bandy, Michael Jackson, safety Jaquan Johnson. Bandy is the new guy. He's a freshman in 2017. Really was good playing the ball. I think he's going to have a breakout year for them. Tariq Black and Donovan Peoples-Jones, two receivers out of Michigan. Michigan is going to get their offense in check, get something out of their passing game, get any quarterback play, both of these guys can make plays. Peoples-Jones, I thought, did some good things on tape as a true freshman. I think his role is going to be increased. Black is another true freshman. Caught 11 passes, but had the season-ending injury. Stay healthy. You'll be hearing about these guys in Ann Arbor this year. Hunter Bryant, good young tight end out of Washington. They lose Dante Pettis, receiver. They need a playmaker. This guy is flashed a lot of potential last year, caught over 20 passes, really, I think, can be a big factor for Washington's offense. Stephen Carr, the next good running back out of USC. They've got to reload. Obviously, Ronald Jones is gone. Sam Darnold's gone. Deontay Burnett, all gone. This guy is a future stud. He's a feature back, and I think he's going to be a big-time player. Dylan Moses, I think you're a little bit more familiar with. Florida native, came in, played well as a true freshman, missed the two playoff games with a foot injury. He stepped in and started to be a beast at the end of last year when they had all those injuries and then had the injury in the playoffs. But he is the next great, one of the next great linebackers at Alabama. You're familiar with Kyler Murray. I put him on the list because he's a transfer from A&M, dual threat guy. Be interesting to see, you know, obviously where he goes with his baseball decision, but going to play football, and he's an interesting guy. There's a corner out of Ohio State, Jeffrey Oduka. Really, really good player. Denzel Ward gone. He's the next really good corner. Juwan Pass and replace Amari Jackson at Louisville. Really good talent. Not Jackson, but really good player. Jaleel Phillips, a defensive lineman from UCLA, is really good young player. He had just played just 7 games last year as a freshman due to injury, but he is a beast. He is a really talented guy that I like a lot. Malcolm Perry, the quarterback at Navy, is somebody to watch that I like a lot. Miles Sanders is next running back at Penn State. They're going to certainly miss Saquon Barkley. This guy is really good. He's got a lot of run skills in his own right. Jalen Reagor out of TCU, true freshman, big-time recruit, going to be a big-time factor for their offense. Dylan Stoner out of Oklahoma State, another big receiver. They lose Aitman and Washington, going to be their number one guy this year. So be on the lookout for him this year. We're going to get into some guys on Tuesday that are coming back from injuries. We're going to save that for time's sake and talk about some of the guys that really were good. You may have forgotten about them because they're off the radar due to injuries, but don't forget about them because they're really good and they're going to have an impact this college football season. So we'll get to that on Tuesday. All right, want to tell you about some good friends that have taken part in our podcast and want to have a serious little talk here, particularly with you guys. Now, let's talk about your love life. You know, as you get older, you remember the days where you were always ready to go and times change, but now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed, and you can get it through BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code Landry, L-A-N-D-R-Y. You just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code Landry. Try it free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, on to cover 3. Going over cover 1, going over cover 2. Cover 3 is a 3 deep, 4 under zone defense, run out of both base and sub packages at the college, major college, and NFL level. It's a scheme that shows up often in early down and distance situations to create an 8-man front. Cover 3 is a first day install coverage in a defense. In the standard 3 deep zone shell, you rush 4, drop 7. Both corners drop to the outside third with the free safety playing in the deep middle of the field or middle third. Underneath, the strong safety and open side linebacker or nickel plays in the curl flat drops. And you know what that is from listening. Our regular listeners knows what the curl and the flat areas are. We've described that. With 2 linebackers sinking to the middle hook drop area. Often thought of as a pretty easy elementary defense with 3-level concepts and inside seam routes, the team that has made this cover 3 look, you know, famous or done it the best in recent years is Pete Carroll's Seattle team. NFL defenses in particular is going to show cover 3 out of their base front to walk the strong safety down as the primary force contained player in the run game versus these offensive personnel groupings. Regular or 21 personnel, which is 2 wide receivers, 1 tight end, 2 running backs. 12 personnel, which is ace, 2 wide receivers, 2 tight ends, 1 running back. Tank personnel, which is 22, 1 wide receiver, 2 tight ends, 2 running backs. And then heavy, which is 13 personnel, which is 1 wide receiver, 3 tight ends, 1 running back. In cover 3, the corners can align off at a depth of 7 to 8 yards, or use press bail technique, a line and press, open and sink to get the outside third. The corners, when using the bail technique to sink their hip before their snaps, you create a cushion versus the wide receiver. The corners are responsible for playing any vertical concept. That's split two verticals to the same side, and it must funnel the deep inside breaking routes, the digs and the post routes, to the free safety. Free safety's technique drop is very similar to cover one play. He must gain depth to create a downhill 45-degree angle to the post or the dig with the ability to get to the bottom of the numbers versus the outside nine route, the vertical route, the go route. The curl flat defenders, the strong safety, and the wheel backers read their run pass keys. The tight end, open side tackle, and drop to a depth of 10 to 12 yards to the top of the numbers. They're taught to buzz through or hold off the curl, sink into the throwing lane, and widen to the flat. Curl flat defenders cannot get out leverage to the flat, and they must run to the wheel route from the number two receiver. The middle hook defenders, the Mike or the Sam backers, read their run pass keys, the inside triangle, the guard, the center guard, and sink to a depth of 10 to 12 yards outside the hash marks. Now, these linebackers must get depth to cushion the inside seam and dig while driving downhill and shallow crossing routes and checkdowns. I mentioned the strong safety as a run defender in cover three, but versus the I formation, the strong safety reads the tight end for his run pass key, and he must contain the run game by squeezing the edge with a hammer technique, which is attack the lead block with the inside shoulder. That's what we call the hammer technique. This allows the safety to force the play back inside to the defensive pursuit. Now, against a slot formation, cover three, the corners don't travel versus the slot to match their coverage like we would see in cover one, which is, you know, man-free. Instead, they become the primary run support player to the backside of the slot formation with a strong safety rolling down over the number two receiver to the open side. The corner walks down to the closed side of the formation and becomes the primary run support defender, the contained force guy. Once the corner clears his run pass keys, which is the tight end, he'll sink with his bail technique to the outside third. This is where NFL offenses often attack the corner with vertical releases from the two tight end wing alignment. To the open side of the formation or slot alignment, the strong safety rolls down over number two. He must reroute any vertical releases from the number two before working to his curl flat drop to take some stress off the open side corner and free safety on a possible seam route. The open side corner is playing off and will flat foot read through this three-step game before getting into his pedal to maintain the cushion versus the receiver in the outside third. Now, the free safety plays the deep middle of the field as he would in any normal pro balance formation. However, because of the slot alignment, he needs to split the formation in his drop to get over the top of the nine route. As I mentioned, the Seahawks probably do the best job of it in modern-day football at any level. And, you know, you think about the guys that they've had, they play press man technique at the line of scrimmage with the protection of a guy like an Earl Thomas in the deep middle of the field. It's pivotal that you have that type of guy. The underneath zone defenders, the curl, flat, middle hook, play the same landmark drop techniques as we talked about in the base cover three looks. However, both corners are aligned with an outside shade. And if the cornerbacks see a smash route, think a smash seven combo, they can drop number one and sink to the outside third to play the possible corner route from the number two. And now against max protection, which is a two-man route scheme, both Maxwell and Sherman, usually for Seattle, they like to match the vertical releases of the receiver from an outside leverage position, and then they funnel those, both the post and the dig, to Thomas. That's what basically they've done in the past in Seattle that worked so well. Like any defense, any coverage, you've got to have the talent to fit what a guy can do. Got to have that to play good cover three, a really rangy, aggressive free safety that can not only cover but tackle. Given the range ability of a guy like a Thomas in the middle of the field, then plus the press cover skills of the corners, this is what you want to run this type of coverage effectively. Now, we like to talk a little bit about the safety's role in what we call three buzz. Cover three buzz allows the defense to disguise their three deep zone by dropping the strong safety down inside the numbers as a middle hook defender. This allows the strong safety to play almost to an inside robber with the linebacker, bumping out to the curl flat and assuming the primary container force responsibilities in the run game. Defenses will show a two deep shell or quarters in their pre-snap alignment, then drop a safety with depth based upon the down and distance situation. In third or second and six, look for a safety to tighten the alignment. And in longer down and distance situation, let's say third and 7 to 10, third and 11 and plus, the safety will sit deeper near the sticks to cushion the seam route while being in a position to drive on the checkdown. You know, I know the Seahawks press their corners on the outside while the free safety Tom Musso will drop to the middle of the field. And with the sandbacker bumping out over the slot, Chancellor drops down to the close-size middle hook. Against the base curl flat combo with the tight end removed from the core of the formation, the number one receiver to the close side, the cornerback squeeze and funnel the curl routes and force the quarterback to target the slot on the underneath checkdown. Because of the pre-snap depth of the strong safety, it gives an ideal position to drive down, deliver clean contact on the underneath the checkdown route. In cover three buzz, the defense can drop either the strong or free safety while showing the quarterback a different look at the line of scrimmage. It's a smart way and an easy disguise of three deep coverage while creating a robber look inside the numbers. Now, cover three cloud is a situational coverage. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. It's a situational coverage for defenses that want to play three deep in the secondary while using cover two technique at the line of scrimmage to jam and reroute the top-tier wide receiver with help over the top. With a two-safety alignment and corners and press coverage, the defense will roll the coverage at the snap to create a three-deep look. To the close side, the strong safety rolls to the deep outside third with the free safety moving to the deep middle. To the open side, the corner drops to the outside third using bail technique. Now, underneath, the close side corner jams the number one receiver to force an inside release and then sinks the cushion to bend the corner route just like you do in cover two. The idea is to impact the release of the number one receiver with a strong safety over the top in a deep third drop. This is what we call this deep third drop is a cloud coverage. The two inside backers, the Mike and the Sam, drop to the middle hook landmarks with the nickel playing the curl flat technique to the open side of the formation. A cover three cloud can be used in specific game situations versus a wide receiver with deep ball ability to disrupt the release and take away the nine route. So this is why you see a lot of things that may look very similar to cover two and cover three. I hope that there's a lot of things to cover. I hope I am explaining it well enough for you to get an understanding of what some of the principles are, what it means, and what some of the responsibilities. You can hear about it, but I'm trying to give you some responsibilities of these coverages. We'll have cover four, and let me know what you think, if it is easy to understand or complex, and I'll try to do it a little bit differently. And we'll get to cover four on Tuesday. Want to spend a little time looking at some NFL head coaches, the changes, and we'll get to some coordinator changes next week. NFL head coaches and how things, some of the changes and how some of that might fit. And kind of, you know, it's one thing to get a guy, hire a guy, and we talked about him when these hires were made. But now that they've had some time and impact into their offseason program, into the draft process, you know, OTAs, we have a feel for maybe how this might play out. So kind of revisit a little bit, and, you know, start with the Cardinals. Steve Wilks comes in for Bruce Arians, and really good defensive assistant. And one of the things that really jumped out at me about him is how his defenses in Carolina were always well-positioned, always defended the run well, teaches and relates well to the players. So that's taken on a really positive role for, like, for example, his relationship early with Larry Fitzgerald. And I think how he's getting guys to buy in, really important. The real key for him is going to be on the offensive side. Can they get the offense figured out? Josh Rosen was done a really nice job, but now trying to handle situations, a young quarterback, when to play him, how to play him, how to handle coaches. Those are all things that first-time head coaches have to figure out. Bruce Arians was a popular guy with the players, had success, but this team's got a pretty good defense, and if they can figure out the quarterback situation, may work pretty well. Chicago, obviously making the move from John Fox to Matt Nagy, going in a different way, in a different role, with a offensive guy. Drafted the quarterback last year, get the quarterback a coach. Comes over from Kansas City, worked under Andy Reid, good offensive mind. Let's call it like it is. He's the head coach. He's been brought in to develop Mitchell Trubisky. He did a good job with a veteran in Alex Smith, and he's going to have to, you know, bring his experience to teach a young quarterback. He's had only 2 years' experience as a coordinator. He's got a rebuild on his hands. How can he handle certain things? Listen, I thought that they did some good things building a roster. I thought John Fox had a lot to do with it. Now this kind of puts a lot of pressure on the entire organization for this to hit. And if the offense is not markedly improved, then this will not be looked at very positively. They need a total reboot. They need to kind of change things around. And he's there to give it to them. We'll see how successful it is. Detroit, going from Jim Caldwell to Matt Patricia. Very interesting. Obviously, spent 14 years under Bill Belichick. He brings success, a pedigree, how to do it. Knows how to play good situational defense. Knows how to build a defense. He's going to have to really do a good job of putting some pieces together in Detroit to be able to do the things situationally that he was able to do in New England. He's going to have to do that. He's going to have to, as a head coach, fix the offense and the running game, which he's working probably harder on that than anything this offseason. Good coach, bright mind. Is he ready for this situation? The biggest key is that he's got a close relationship with the general manager. They work together in New England. This is why the hire is made. Jury's still out. I think kind of changing things to where they can be a better defense and a better running game. They've got a quarterback that most would like to have in the league. So from that respect, I'm excited about the potential there. I'm really excited about what Frank Reich can do in Indianapolis. He's a really good offensive coach, probably doesn't get enough credit for it. He didn't call the plays in Philly, but I think as a head coach, maybe even a little bit more skilled. He relates extremely well to people, players. He's a straightforward guy that handles things in a very tactful manner. I think this guy could be a home run hire. We know that Josh McDaniels backed out of it, but it's kind of Frank Wright. Always there to clean things up. I think he's going to do a really good job for this team, but this roster needs to be rebuilt, refixed, and they need Andrew Luck back healthy. I think Frank will be really successful. In Oakland, Lawton, without question, the most hype with John Gruden going to Oakland. Mark Davis, targeting him all along. He's loved him. You know, here's the thing about it. He's a guy that most people in the media have latched onto as like this coaching genius. If you studied him and watched him, he's very, very average as a coach. He's won 5 postseason games, and 3 of them came on a Bucs team that was built by someone else. John does not have a good reputation of developing young players. He does not have a reputation for being very patient. He's a guy that likes to throw out a lot of strategy talk, but teaching has not been a real strength of his. I think it's a publicity move, yet it is something that Mark Davis has always been enamored with John. It's just his type of guy. I don't think that they've gotten better on the sidelines in Oakland with this move. It's more expensive, high profile, but I question how successful this is going to be. maybe proven wrong. I hope I am. But I'm not sure that this is going to pay off to the degree that people think. I think John Gruden is very overrated as a coach. I think he's an average coach at best. And he's proven that everywhere he's been. Yet there's a perception that is just not reality. And I think that's the prevailing thought inside football. Like Pat Shurmur and the Giants, like his style. You know, he's also had some experience as a head coach, which helps him. Wasn't successful, but this guy's really good. He's been around football his entire life. Really good teacher. Really calm in a chaotic New York atmosphere. Is going to be a good fit. Going to methodically build a team. Not going to overreact. All things I think that are important as a head coach. And particularly important as a head coach in New York. Don't worry about the whole sizzle and all that. That's not what wins. This guy's a good football coach. He'll fix this offense. They've got to fix the protection schemes. I think this is going to be an improved-looking unit. Tennessee with Mike Vrabel, another fast-track guy that comes from the Belichick tree that went out to Houston, working on a Bill O'Brien. Been only one season as a coordinator. I think his strength, though, is not calling plays, not building a defense, is how he relates to players, how he instills toughness, expectation level. It's not a big rebuild. It's more of a kind of pointing them a little bit in the right direction and polishing off something that's in pretty good shape. Matt LaFleur and Pat O'Hara are going to have to fix Marcus Mariota and this offense to where they can go where they need to be, because there's some talent on defense, and I think Mike will do a good job. So that's a kind of a look at those guys, and we'll get into some of the coordinator hires, which are just as important on Tuesday. All right, I want to talk a little bit about an NFL team, a college team. As I mentioned, we'll do one each a day, and I want to talk a little bit about Alabama first. We'll jump over there, and we'll get to Philadelphia. You know, when you look at the Alabama – and part of what I'll do here is kind of talk about the program and kind of where they are and kind of where this kind of plays out. And the storyline at Alabama this offseason is, what are they going to do at quarterback? Well, you can't control what a young man's going to do, but I do believe that Nick Saban, better than anybody, can handle the difficulties that comes with two talented quarterbacks that can both play and you can win with. In Jalen Hurts, they've got a winner. They've got a runner, that a guy that has to improve as a passer. But there's no doubt Alabama goes unbeaten this year with Jalen Hurts starting every game. With Tua Tagovailoa, he presents a guy that can move, but he's a better passer in terms of making plays in the passing game. But is he as good at protecting the football as Jalen Hurts? That's a big question mark. Alabama probably wins every game with Tua at quarterback. But they're probably a greater chance of being upset in a game with Tua at quarterback, because the only way they're going to get beaten by pretty much anybody on their schedule, with one or two exceptions, Auburn being one, but that game this year is at home at Alabama. It's probably unlikely, but the only way that Alabama is going to lose is if they turn the football over. But Alabama's chances of winning deep into the playoffs, as we saw in the championship game, had a lot to do with their ability to make plays in the passing game, and Tua can do that. Nick's going to do what's best for the team. Not going to worry about the ego of the players. The thing that impresses me about this program and this team is the consistent ability to evaluate and develop players and play young guys. I mean, they had all these freshmen running around in the championship game. Three receivers, a left tackle, a tailback. It barely saw the field, and boom, they're playing in the championship game, trying to come from behind and win. And now these guys are going to be leading the team? Are you kidding me? This is almost unfair. They're probably as dynamic as they've been. They reload with their ability to get players to fill in, and they reload with their ability to get assistance that can have an impact. Look at the offensive staff. I think they've done some good things, bringing some guys apart. Then Craig Kulikowski coming in to coach the defensive line. They retool. They've got the best edge guy in the SEC in Roquan Davis. They struggled in the secondary at times, giving up some big plays. They gamble a lot, but they've got a lot of talent, and they coach them up better than anybody. They recruit them better than anybody, and that's why they're always there. Clemson recruits at the same level as Alabama. They don't coach quite as good as Alabama. Places like a Michigan State coach probably as well. They don't recruit as well. Alabama is Alabama because they recruit at a level that's higher than anyone else, and they coach at a level that's better than anyone else. That's an unbeatable combination. NFL team of the week, of the day, actually, of this show, the champions in the NFL, Philadelphia Eagles, really improved a lot. Last year at this time, I thought they could be an improved team. I did not see them ending up as a Super Bowl team. Peterson did a really good job. I thought they really added some tough-minded players, more speed to the defense, built around Carson Wentz, really coach up that offense well from a quarterback situation, and as we saw it with Nick Foles stepping in. They're not going to change much with their rosters. Peters will return to his position. Jason Kelsey, Brandon Brooks, Lane Johnson played well. Zach Ertz took a step back last year. They drafted Dallas Goedert. Makes some sense at tight end. They moved on from Torrey Smith and signed Mike Wallace. But Alshon Jeffrey was inked to an extension. Nelson Aguilar took a big step forward. Got a guy in the Jay Ajayi trade that really hit off. And Corey Clement went from, you know, an undrafted guy to a significant contributor as a rookie. They couldn't hold on to Vinnie Curry, signed with the Bucks, but they did get Michael Bennett. So we'll see if that personality can fit in, but is a really good player, should help them. Nigel Bradham was an important re-signing for them. Sidney Jones should challenge Jalen Mills for the starting corner spot opposite Ronald Dorby, but they've got plenty of pass rushers with plenty of coverage people, and Wentz comes back. This team is set up short-term and long-term to be pretty good. Clearly the favorites in the NFC East. I mean, what does that really mean? I think that they've got a roster that is quite a bit better than Dallas, quite a bit better than Washington. So they're going to have to come back to the pack big time for those teams to have a chance. I'm not saying have a chance in a given game when they play in November and December, or I'm trying to think exactly when they play Dallas. I think they play Dallas in November and in December again. But they're better. They're better over the course of the season than Dallas. They're better as a roster over the course of the season than Washington. Injuries, of course, can change that. The Giants are closer than Dallas and Washington in terms of a roster. But the Eagles clearly are the team to beat in the NFC East, at least, and certainly one of the teams to beat in the NFC. All right, we're going to end up the show with answering a question about Tim Couch, asking me what did I think about Tim Couch coming. Tim Couch coming out of Kentucky. First of all, Tim Couch coming out of high school into Kentucky, very highly thought of, very highly recruited, very talented young man, very good college career. He was not a bad player. He was a bust in Cleveland, largely due to the fact that they did a poor job with him and a poor job around him. Got beaten up. I would call it kind of a David Carr scenario as well when he was drafted by Houston, Derek Carr's brother, older brother. When you take a player that has talent and you don't have stability in coaching him and you don't have stability in building a team around him, you never know what you can get. So the facts are he did not play very well. He was not very productive. And you could call him a bust. But the issue is, why was he a bust? Well, why was he a bust? It was in large part, not everything to do with it, but a large part to do with how the organization handled him coming in, how they handled him once he was there, and that contributed to it. So always keep in mind that when we throw out the term bust, we always say this guy's good, that guy's not good, and we just assume that based upon the results that it must determine this. The results are the byproduct of a lot of different things, and the player's talent's only just a part of it. Reminder again, if you're not yet a member of LandryFootball.com, take advantage of our summer savings special. 50% off any membership package. Use the coupon code SUMMER. It's the best offer we have. You'll love it. Football season is not that far away, folks, and we are getting you ready for it. And we'll get you ready for another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on Tuesday. Talk to you then.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
But if you let certain media outlets tell you, oh, a person that's unarmed is not a threat to police officers, so why did the officer have to pull out his taser? Why did the officer have to use force? Why did the officer have to do this? Well, go ask the families of Teresa King and Patrick Wura, those two deputies who, when they woke up that morning, probably thought they would make it home to their families that night because, oh, they're not out on the street. They're just transporting prisoners that aren't armed, that are shackled, that are handcuffed, but yet an unarmed, shackled prisoner was enough of a threat to kill two law enforcement officials. Huh. But yeah, someone that's unarmed is not a threat. And white people, white police officers, just pull their guns, their tasers out for absolutely no reason.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.